So welcome, everyone, to another Iowa City Foreign Relations Council program. I'm Karen Chappell. I'm a member of the board, and I will also be your host for today. I want to thank you all for joining us for today's presentation by Rebecca Fons, who is our programming director at Film Scene, and who will be speaking on overcoming the one-inch barrier, experiencing the world through foreign film. And if you were like me and you didn't know what the one-inch barrier meant, it's on that little sheet of, it's one of the questions, so I'm not going to tell you what it is, but take a look at the sheet. I'm extremely pleased to host this program because I am also on the board of directors of Film Scene, and I have watched Rebecca ever since she came to Film Scene. And she has done such a successful job of bringing really wonderful, outstanding, and diverse movies to our community. And so I'm very pleased to be the one now to introduce her to you. But before I begin that, I would like to acknowledge our university and community supporters, the University of Iowa's Honors Program, the University of Iowa International Programs, the University of Iowa Public Policy Center, and the Stanley UI Foundation Support Organization. So we thank each one of these for their financial support of our programs. I also want to support today's special sponsors, Mason K. Braverman, Dave and Diane Martin, and Karen and Wally Chappell. A thank you also should go to City Channel 4 for professionally recording our programs for cablecast on City Channel 4, or 118-2, and also for the UI Library's digital archives. So you all know that you can always go to the library and get copies of any of our programs that you want to see later on. Please be sure to like City Channel 4 on your Facebook. All right, it is my great pleasure to introduce Rebecca Fons. Rebecca is the programming director for Film Scene, Iowa City's premier art house theater. And if anybody hasn't gone to Film Scene, please do so. She also serves as the development and programming director for the Iowa Theater, which is a multidisciplinary film and performance center in her hometown of Winterset, Iowa. Rebecca was the education director for the Chicago International Film Festival for nearly a decade and is a co-founder of Destroy Your Art, a yearly film performance art event in Chicago. Rebecca received a master's degree in arts management from Columbia College Chicago and a BA in cinema and comparative literature studies from the University of Iowa. She is a Steppenwolf Theater Associate and a member of the Gene Siskel Film Center's Community Council. She serves on the screening committees for the True False Film Festival and the South by Southwest Film Festival, and she is also a juror at many festivals around the country. Please welcome Rebecca.
Thank you so much, Karen, and thank you all so much for having me. A big shout out to the Council of Foreign Relations team, and just it's so nice to come talk about foreign film and talk about film, which I do a lot every day, but not often with a microphone in front of me. So it's truly my pleasure. And also to speak about film 2 days after the Academy Awards, and they were monumental Academy Awards. Show of hands, how many people were watching the Oscars on Sunday night? Excellent. I will be going into that a little bit more. And today I'm going to speak a little bit about myself and my personal film journey, and then also what I do at Film Scene and a little bit about Film Scene. And then I'll end with some suggestions and encouragement for activating your own foreign film experience. And we'll do some dishing about Sunday night's Oscars. Just really quickly, and I'll say it back so the camera will get, anybody want to shout out a favorite film of theirs? Parasite, excellent. That's very in the zeitgeist, Wally. Thank you. Anybody else? It doesn't have to be a foreign film, and it doesn't have to be a arty film. I love Moonstruck and Casablanca. Wonderful. Dr. Strangelove. Jojo Rabbit, To Kill a Mockingbird. These are Russian Ark. Excellent. Deeper Cut. Any else? Well, I think if you think about it a little bit more, everyone has a favorite film, and we have a favorite film because we were shown it when we were children, or we showed it to our own children, or we had our first kiss at a movie theater when we were watching it, or we were terrified when we watched it. I always remember Jurassic Park being such a horrifying movie-going experience that I remember the feeling of being in Indianola, Iowa, about 12 years old, and really thinking the dinosaurs were going to come out of the screen. So all of those sort of embed in us a love for film. And I love that, you know, no matter where you go, if you have start having a conversation about film, inevitably there are streams that cross, and there's a film where you say, oh, I love that moment too, or oh, I didn't like that one so much. Ah, oh, you like that? I can't believe that. So film is a great equalizer, and I'll speak a little bit about that today. To start with, this photo is me in third grade. I always like to kind of give you a sense of who I am. I feel like this exemplifies that I was clearly a pretty nerdy kid from day one. I actually wore a sweater just like that for Oscar night, and my husband pointed out, he's like, isn't that the sweater you've had since third grade? So I was born in Winterset, Iowa. I feel like I heard a shout out for Winterset when Karen was saying my bio. Maybe some people know Winterset. It's about 25 miles southwest of Des Moines, and Winterset is the birthplace of John Wayne and home to the John Wayne Birthplace Museum. And it's also the home of the Bridges of Madison County, and that is where the 1995 Clint Eastwood film and Meryl Streep film was filmed. And I remember very vividly, 95, I would have been about 13, being waved at by Clint Eastwood across the street during filming. And I didn't really understand then just what a handsome man he was. But now as I've gotten older and matured, he cuts a good figure. So Winterset has always had a connection to film, and I've always had a connection to film through Winterset, but Winterset is decidedly not a bastion of foreign film. It's a small town of less than 7,000, and though it's diversified quite a bit, it is, you know, pretty homogenous community. So fortunately, I grew up in a very curious, artistically inclined household. My mother, who is in the middle, who is the mother in that picture, was raising three children as a single mother. And for many years, we struggled financially. And something that we could always count on was renting a movie at the local video store, where I later worked. Again, film nerd continues to be a theme during my presentation today. So renting a movie at the local video store and popping a bowl of buttery popcorn and watching something together was really something that we could always do on a budget. And I think that's something that resonates still today. That's something that people can do. Now it's less VHSs and more Netflix or Hulu or Apple Plus or Disney Plus. But it's something that instilled in me an early love of the magic of movies. And in fact, I joked about it earlier, but my first kiss was at a movie theater. It was the Iowa Theater, which I'll talk about in a little bit more. His name was Danny Hendrickson. The movie was Toy Story. The rest is history. We did not get married, so it's not that much of a romance. So I grew up with debatable classics being my favorite films, like Don Chaffee's Jason and the Argonauts. Feel free to woot if any of these are your favorites. Jason and the Argonauts, Steven Spielberg's Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark, John Huston's Annie, and Norman Jewison's Moonstruck. There were very few cartoons in my childhood. My mother really loved the movies, and these were the ones that we had on VHS. So we watched a lot of these. There were lots more. Our VHS collection was really strong. So as I got older, and once I blessedly got a driver's license, I began leaving Winterset and driving to Des Moines, to the currently shuttered, hopefully temporarily shuttered, Varsity Theater near Drake's campus. Is anybody familiar with the Varsity? So it closed about a year and a half ago, but there is a great group of people trying to bring it back. But at the Varsity, I started to catch foreign films. And when I think about the first foreign films that I saw, foreign language films that I saw, I credit those that sort of entered the mainstream. And when we talk about Parasite in a minute, I think that's one of those foreign language films, non-English films, that kind of entered the zeitgeist into the mainstream. So for me, and I really tried to think of the first foreign language film that I saw, and it might have been Roberto Benigni's Life is Beautiful, which you see there on the top. And then I also loved Jean-Pierre Jeunet's Amelie, which I'm sure lots of you have seen, and then Ang Lee's Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. These are some of the most memorable foreign films that I saw, and ones that, you know, you later saw at the Oscars, or that probably made it to the local cinemas here in Iowa City or in the town where you were in the late 90s, early 2000s. And in each of these films, I was exposed not only to foreign language, and I should note that I was a barely C-plus Spanish student all of high school. I ended up taking it pass-fail, much to the chagrin of my Spanish teacher. So not only did it invite me into a world of foreign language, but also into new dynamics, often with gender, that I didn't see in American cinema. For instance, the powerful women in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. New cities. The first time I saw Paris was in Amelie on screen. And then previously untapped emotions. I remember seeing Life is Beautiful and not really being prepared for the emotional gut punch that the film was. And I remember very distinctly the usher at the movie theater coming over to me with a box of Kleenex at the end of the film. I don't know if someone had complained about my sobbing or they just knew that it was expected for that movie. So I started to really experience foreign film in high school. And then I got my bachelor's degree here at the University of Iowa, doubling in cinema, which was cinema and comparative literature back then. Now it's cinematic arts, but with a double major in American studies. And here on this campus is where my love of foreign films really continued. And it was in classrooms just down the street that I first saw Vittoria De Sica's The Bicycle Thieves, Chantal Ackerman's Jean Delman, and Pedro Almodovar's All About My Mother. Pedro Almodovar had a film, Pain and Glory, that just was this past year, which was wonderful, and was nominated for an Academy Award on Sunday. Anybody familiar with any of these classics? I see some nodding. I see some recognition. So after undergraduate here at the University of Iowa and a brief, very poor stint in New York City, where I saw a lot of movies, I moved to Chicago to get my master's degree in arts management at Columbia College Chicago, which led me to my job as the education director and programmer at the Chicago International Film Festival. I worked the festival for nearly 10 years, where my life with foreign films truly came into focus and really bloomed. Each year for the festival, which takes place in October, and if you want to sojourn to Chicago, I highly recommend it. It's a wonderful festival. Each year we programmed over 80 feature-length films, and typically over 50% of those films were not in English. So I have, for better or for worse, moderated Q&As with filmmakers from Greece, Korea, Japan, Portugal, France, Russia, Croatia, China, Sweden, Brazil, Cuba, Mexico, Iceland, and Macedonia, among others. I also conducted a Q&A with Al Pacino, who basically speaks in a foreign language. And here's some photos of me giving my, you know, classic I'm listening face. My hand on my chin is kind of how I do most Q&As. But it was a wonderful experience. And after nearly a decade at the festival, I took on an unexpected, potentially foolish project, which was rehabilitating the Iowa Theater. So the Iowa Theater, where I had my first kiss, just keep talking about that kiss. I think this is the last time I talk about it, but the Iowa Theater is the movie theater in my hometown, truly just blocks from my my childhood home, and it closed unceremoniously in 2015. And shortly after it was shuttered, my mother, who still lives in Winterset, we purchased it and spent 2 years raising just over $1 million and overseeing a gut rehab. So this is the outside of the Iowa Theater shortly after the marquee had been turned back on. So if you ever find yourself in Central Iowa, the Iowa Theater is worth a visit. We show classic films every Way Back Wednesday, is what we call it, and second-run new releases each week. Last week, the lineup was From Here to Eternity was the Way Back Wednesday film, and last week, the new release they showed was Little Women, which also got some spotlight on Oscar night. So the Iowa Theater project brought me to Film Scene, where I've been the programming director since late 2017. Film Scene is Iowa City's nonprofit. Show of hands, anybody who hasn't been there? No judgment? Oh, no one. Everyone's like, no, I'm not going to do that right now with Rebecca and Karen in the room. That's okay. It's all right if you haven't. And also, of course, we have this beautiful new facility. So Film Scene is Iowa City's nonprofit, member-driven art house cinema, and we recently underwent an incredible growth spurt, partnering with the Englert Theater on our Strengthen, Grow, Evolve campaign to make the greatest small city for the arts in America. We evolved from our original two-screen cinema in the Pedestrian Mall, which is still there and running like a well-oiled machine, and our second home at the Chauncey Building, where we have three screens and without a doubt, the most sophisticated projection equipment in the entire state of Iowa. That is not just a humble brag. We truly, truly have the best in the business. From 16 millimeter celluloid to digital 3D, Film Scene presents, in my humble opinion, thoroughly curated film the way it's meant to be seen, with beautiful light, beautiful sound. And I always say with a bright wall and a dark room, anything is possible. And Film Scene strives to bring the best in independent, including sometimes locally made and locally connected films, award-winning films, and foreign films to Iowa City. you'd have to go to Chicago, to Minneapolis, to St. Louis to get anything on par with Film Scene. And I think you'd actually probably have to go a little bit further than those places. So this is the Chauncey Building, which is on the corner of Gilbert and College. And then, of course, our pedestrian mall location is right across from Revival and in the back of Velvet Coat on College Street. So I've been very fortunate to, and this is a picture of our original cinema, Scene One, that's in our pedestrian mall location. So I've been very fortunate to travel the world and see movies in a variety of cinemas, some very bad, some very good. And I've been able to jury for and sit on screening committees for a number of film festivals. Karen mentioned some of them. The Chicago International Film Festival, True False, which is a documentary film festival in Columbia, Missouri, and South by Southwest, which is in Austin, Texas. And again, we should all be very proud to know that here in Iowa City, we have a nationally recognized and respected cinema. And again, in my humble opinion, an incredible team, perhaps one of the most incredible teams of hardworking people, including our board of directors, who love film and the art of connecting film with audiences. In my role as programming director, I oversee all aspects of what go on our screen at Film Scene, from new releases to specialty series like our summer rooftop lineup. Some of you might have seen Movies Under the Stars with us. Our year-round picture show family series, which is free for kids and supported by Midwest One. And our diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives like our LGBTQIA program called Pride at Film Scene. Our Real Representation program, which presents films directed by women and gender non-binary filmmakers. And our African Diaspora program, which prioritizes films made by African American and Black filmmakers. So, which brings me to the title of my presentation, which is Overcoming. So this is maybe a cheat. Maybe this was a quiz question and I'm about to give you the answer. But the title is Overcoming the One-Inch Barrier of an Experience of the World Through Foreign Film. So this title was inspired by a recent acceptance speech at the Golden Globes made by South Korean filmmaker Bong Joon-ho, who directed the now historic film Parasite. And this was after he won the foreign language film Golden Globe, best foreign language film Golden Globe. So I have that acceptance speech embedded here, and we are going to play that for you. So that brings me to that's an amazing speech, by the way, and I should note that the film exhibition world, all of us who operate cinemas and that show foreign film, loved that. Overcoming the one-inch barrier, you'll be rewarded with so many amazing films is sort of like what we've all been fighting for our entire careers. So it was a really amazing moment, and such a great, it's like he knew that we'd be able to put that on t-shirts and bumper stickers. It's fantastic. So that brings me to some of the most exciting contemporary filmmakers, international filmmakers working today, and some of the films to add to your must-watch list. So I would note that Parasite is still playing on screen at Film Scene. It's our number one film of all time. Has anybody in here seen it? I know a few people have. Oh, excellent. So thank you so much for helping make it our number one film of all time. It's a South Korean film. Bong Joon-ho has been making films for decades. Some of his hits include a film called Okja, which is on Netflix if you want to watch it. It's very strange. He kind of works in sci-fi, fantasy genre. Parasite is unique because it really kind of defies all genres and all labeling. He also made a film called Snowpiercer, which I recommend checking out. And then there's other really wonderful films. His favorite film of mine before Parasite is a film called Mother, which is a smaller drama, but really a wonderful film. And then, of course, The Host, which I think if anyone was in college around the time I was, they were probably watching The Host with me. So some of the, before I give some suggestions for sort of your must watch list, I just kind of wanted to, maybe the thesis statement of my presentation is sort of the importance of international film and foreign language film. I think especially as Iowans, just a week past the caucus, we will not discuss. We're living in pretty divisive times. I think that's sort of a cliched thing to say, but I think we all feel that sort of politically and culturally, it's easy to feel sort of fractured or sort of alone or sort of, you know, confused about where we are as a community, where we are as a country, and where we are on the global stage. And I find that sitting in a dark room with an audience of potentially neighbors or loved ones, as well as strangers, and participating in the shared experience of storytelling through a moving image really helps me feel less confused, and it helps me feel more connected. It connects me to myself, my own past experiences and how those are reflected on the screen, to my fellow man and woman, and just to sort of my planet as a whole. And I'd like to share with you one of my favorite passages or quotes about film, which is from the late great Roger Ebert. Hopefully that won't, I have it here. I'm gonna read it to you in case you can't read it. So Roger Ebert spoke these words when he received his star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame in 2005, excuse me. "Movies are the most powerful empathy machine in all the arts. When I go to a great movie, I can live somebody else's life for a while. I can walk in somebody else's shoes. I can see what it feels like to be a member of a different gender, a different race, a different economic class, to live in a different time, to have a different belief. This is a liberating influence on me. It gives me a broader mind. It helps me to join my family of men and women on this planet. It helps me to identify with them, so I'm not just stuck being myself day after day. The great movies enlarge us. They civilize us. They civilize us. They make us more decent people." So that's one of my favorite kind of credos, and I think he sums up not just international film, but just the power of film. And I started today's talk by, you know, asking you what your favorite movies are, and I think, you know, I'm obviously biased to the medium, the art medium of cinema, but I think we all find that connection if we're watching a play at Riverside or seeing a show at Engler. We have that moment where everyone takes a collective breath, or everyone jumps to their feet for a standing ovation, or you give a tissue to someone next to you who's crying because you have an extra one in your purse. Those are moments that are really unique, and I think that they don't often happen otherwise. We showed a wonderful film called A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, which was about Mr. Rogers. It was not a foreign language film, but Tom Hanks playing Mr. Rogers. That was earlier this year. And then last year we showed Won't You Be My Neighbor, which was the documentary about Fred Rogers. And after that film, I mean, maybe it was just me and I was feeling the love, but people were holding the door for one another more. People were hugging each other afterwards in the audience. And I think that's so special, and it's so special to be in spaces and art spaces that make that possible. After Parasite, which I'll talk a little bit more about, it's such a film to digest in more ways than one, but I've noticed people sitting and standing outside Film Scene talking about it elatedly and excitedly and shocked, and it's just really exciting. I think those of us who operate in the film world and exhibition, that's sort of like what gets our juices flowing, is seeing those moments when the film ends, but the interaction continues. And film is such a hard medium to connect with. You know, if you're seeing a show at Riverside, the actors, if you sneeze, they can hear you. You know, maybe not completely, but they recognize that there's a noise in the audience. Similarly with the show, you know, if you have someone singing along with you, next to you, you know, it's interactive. But film, it's like, we can't change that film. That film was done. Bong Joon-ho made Parasite. It was put on a digital drive, and then it was ingested into our servers, and that's kind of it. So when films transcend that fourth wall barrier into our daily lives, it's really, really exciting. Makes me sort of emotional. So anyway, so what should we see now? What's next for foreign film? So I'm going to tell you a little bit about some upcoming films that I'm really excited about. And I have two trailers to show as well, including one for Parasite, for those of you who are maybe hearing about Parasite for the first time. One thing about the Oscars, and a lot of you were watching them, so... Well, I'll get into that in a second. I'll talk about these films first. So first of all, there's a film opening at Film Scene on February 28th called Beanpole. It's a film by a Russian director. He's 25 years old, which makes me feel like I've been asleep at the wheel for a long time. Kantemir Balagov. It's a beautiful film about Leningrad after the war. And it's two women who are friends and nearly sisters who come together over tragedy and how to rebuild their lives after living in a war-torn environment for so long. It is a challenge. It is Russian. Many Russian films are challenging, but it is so beautifully rendered. I feel like that poster with the green is just a hint at the color, the vibrancy and the color of the film. I think Russian film is, I have a real blind spot when it comes to Russian film, but I really encourage you to check it out. It didn't get an Academy Award nomination, but it's one of those films that will stick in your your craw, and it will stay there, and you'll be thinking about it for many, many weeks to come. And it has the best, I think, my favorite scene in a movie in all of 2019, which is saying a lot. And then there's another film, you're going to see a trailer for this. This is Portrait of a Lady on Fire. This is directed by Céline Sciamma. It's a French film set in a time with corsets and very strict gender roles. And it's about a love affair between two women. You'll see a trailer for that, so I won't say too much more about it. And then The Truth, which is a French and Japanese co-production. It's directed by Hirokazu Koreeda, who did the Shoplifters film, which was 2 years ago. Some of you may have seen it. It won the Cannes Palme d'Or, but it won a lot of awards, and it's a beautiful film. Koreeda is a Japanese filmmaker. This is his first film not in Japanese, and it stars the great Catherine Deneuve, who's a French actress, and Juliette Binoche. It's really fun. Catherine Deneuve plays a sort of outrageous actress who is writing her tell-all memoir, and her daughter, played by Juliette Binoche, comes home, and lots of old wounds, but also like old stories and hilarity are brought up. And Koreeda is a master of his craft, and it's really fun to see him play in a different language. I always love that when foreign language filmmakers play in a language that is not their own. I think it's always very interesting. And then, of course, Parasite, sort of the man of the hour, is Bong Joon-ho. It's a film from South Korea, and it's playing here at Film Scene. It will almost have been on our screen for 100 days. I think on February 18th, 100 days, which is a long time. So the Oscars were a historic milestone night. Parasite was the first South Korean film to win the Best International Feature Film, and the first time ever in the 92 years of the Oscars that a non-English language film won Best Picture. So this was monumental for many reasons. 10 times before has a non-English film been nominated. So Life is Beautiful was nominated, Roma a couple years ago, but never before in the industry has this happened. So I was really, really thrilled to see what I felt was the most deserving film take home the gold. And so I want to share with you a trailer for Parasite. And these are just the internet was freaking out on Monday, but some of the quotes about how monumental this was. And I think the Oscars are really mired in a lot of controversy. People, you know, don't like who's nominated or feel that the people who are nominated are just, you know, marketing dollars to get awards. But this sort of transcended all that. And so he was sort of the dark horse, and that he won was really special. So I want to show you the trailer for Parasite, which I think will make you want to see it if you haven't seen it already. And my only note is, beyond this trailer, if you haven't read anything about the film, do not read anything about the film. Do not look beyond this trailer, because it's really, the less you know, the better. And there are some people in here who've seen it, so don't spoil anything for anyone. And then after Parasite, I have the trailer for that French film, Céline Sciamma's film, Portrait of a Lady on Fire, which opens on March 13th. Pretty good. If we all just want to leave right now and go see Parasite, I know some people who can get us in. So Parasite's playing now at Film Scene. It's at our pedestrian mall location. We will keep it. I remember on Sunday night when it won Best Picture, I said, we're keeping this on screen the whole year. So we will keep it on screen as long as we can. And for those of you who've seen it, I also recommend, and this isn't just to sell a ticket, it's great for a second viewing once you know what's happening, what's coming. I watched it the first time kind of just agog at what was happening as it was happening. So to watch it again is really a blast, because you feel like you're sort of in on the game. And then before I show this last trailer, which is for Portrait of a Lady on Fire, I will say, for those of you who are inspired or interested to see more movies with us at Film Scene, there are so many opportunities to do so. We have a wonderful membership program. I'm sure I recognize some members in the room here. But also, if you're interested in volunteering with us, every time you volunteer, you get to see a movie for free. And that's a really great way to get to know us. And we love our volunteers. We have volunteer prizes, and we have a Volunteer of the Year award. But it's a really great way to see films in that capacity, and also help out. Our volunteers are an incredibly important part of our team. And I will just say too, you know, I mentioned just a handful of films that are playing now, but we have a really great year ahead of us. 2020 looks to be a very exciting year for film. And so I will be working diligently behind the scenes to make sure the best of just the films you want to see, just, you know, the new James Bond movie is opening in April at Film Scene. We're very excited about it. But also, you know, some of those films that maybe aren't on your radar, but I'm scouring literally the ends of the earth film festivals all across the country, film communities and film societies all around the world for the best and of the best. So it delights me to no end to have a film that I'm just, you know, going like this about. I'm just like, oh, I'm so excited for people to see this and see what they think about it. So there's lots more in store at Film Scene. So this last trailer I'll show is the Portrait of a Lady on Fire film. Again, it's beautiful. It's just a lush, gorgeous film about a love affair between two women. It's a period piece. If you're into portraiture or art, it's also a feast for you because it's about a woman drawing a portrait of another woman or painting another portrait of another woman. So we'll try this one. Good. So that concludes my portion of the presentation. Thank you all so much. I'm excited to hear any questions or comments you have about what you heard today or your love of foreign film or film in general. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Rebecca. I hope she's inspired some of you to trek over to Film Scene and see these films. And I want to shout out, I didn't do it when you all were saying what your favorite movie is, but I have to say Seven Samurai. I really like that movie. Well, let's just start with this one, Rebecca. What have you noticed about the cult, the cinematic taste of Iowa citizens?
You're all very smart and intelligent and beautiful. I have been really pleasantly surprised. You know, I like cut my teeth really at the Chicago International Film Festival, and those audiences were voraciously they responded. They had voracious appetites for foreign film, but the festival only took place once a year for 2 weeks, so it was sort of like the anticipation would build, and you know, I mean, it was sort of like they couldn't not come. Whereas Film Scene is a 365 days a year cinema, and I think, you know, we all get fatigued with all the offerings. I mean, there's so many incredible things happening in Iowa City, so it can be sort of exhausting to be like, oh, you know, we often open 2 to 3 new films a week now that we have 2 locations. But I've been really, I guess maybe what I'm trying to say is the stamina of the Iowa City community is really strong, and their stamina, we're good Iowans, you know, we're like, we're doing the job. But the curiosity, so the endurance and the curiosity to continue to explore new films. You know, sometimes we'll show something. I remember Shoplifters is a good example. That's the Kurieda film that we showed, I think it was last spring. And it was, you know, it hadn't gotten the Parasite craze. You know, Parasite's kind of one of those ones I was talking about that kind of enters into the mainstream and we all get sort of swept up with it. But Shoplifters was one that was a little quieter. And I was sort of like, I don't know if anybody's going to come to this. But I was shocked to see, you know, 30, 40, 50 people a show, which is really a testament to everyone's curiosity and their wanting to explore these films. And I've also noticed that the darker the film is, it's a little bit more challenging for us to sell. I think we're all a little afraid of something that's going to literally scare us. And a lot of times foreign films navigate in those darker spaces. They're obviously darker American films, but they sometimes live in those genres very specifically, you know, horror, sci-fi, those kind of things. But like Parasite is a good example. It dips into horror a little bit, and then it dips into comedy, and it dips into drama and commentary on race and class and equality. So I think people were, I remember seeing someone before they went into Parasite, they said, am I going to be horrified? And I was like, maybe a little bit, but you'll be okay. You know, just make it to the end. So so I think, you know, as people like to know what it is they're in for, but they're also in for anything. So I would say that you should pat yourselves on the back, because sometimes we show some really strange films at Film Scene from filmmakers you've never heard of with no one famous in them, and you all come out. So.
Okay, this one is a little political, but some say that film is now the dominant art form of our time. Why is that true or not true?
Interesting. And do you want these too? I think I put these up. I think that film often is the, I guess dominant is maybe the right word, because it is the most accessible art form. You know, a ticket to a live show can sometimes be $20 plus, whereas a movie ticket, you know, on a Tuesday afternoon is maybe $6, you know, depending on the cinema that you go to. So a lot of times, you know, if you pulled like a 15-year-old off the street and dragged him in here and said, what's the last movie you saw? He could probably name six movies. But if you asked him what's the last stage performance he saw or the last ballet he saw, he may not have an answer for you, unfortunately. And film is often, it's sort of like the, some people say it's the lowest common denominator. We also all grew up watching film. I didn't grow up going to ballet, so it's not really in my, it's not in my DNA to want to seek it out. So we all grew up watching film. Sometimes it was our babysitter when mom or dad wasn't available. So I think it is sort of dominant in that way. Also, we have entered into such an interesting age of streaming. So Netflix, you know, sort of began it all, but now there's Hulu and there's Showtime has a streaming channel and HBO has a streaming channel and Disney Plus has a streaming channel. And of course, all of these streaming channels are making us film exhibitors with brick and mortar cinemas sort of quake in our boots a little bit. But it's great for all of us who just want to watch a good movie at home. I try not to begrudge those streaming services too much because I actually think they're getting really great film to the masses that might not, you know, someone really wants to see a Martin Scorsese film, but they don't have a bus card and they don't have the $10 it's going to cost to go to the movie, but they do have a Netflix account, then they can watch it at home. And I think that's a good thing because I think it makes them seek out more film. But yeah, I think film is often sort of like the first go-to. We all have TVs in our house. Most people have TVs in their house, which is sort of makes it really easy to access that. So yeah, I think that is true to a certain extent. But there's so many, you know, ways that film crosses the streams with theater or that theater. I mean, I remember seeing a show at Steppenwolf not too long ago that had a huge film component of that show, that live show, and whether that was Steppenwolf trying to tap into that, that draw to the screen that we all have, or it was just part of what they wanted to achieve. It was just interesting that I think two shows I've seen now, two live shows, have had some sort of moving image component. So, you know, for better or for worse, I think film is here to stay.
From your perspective, what makes a good dub of a film in another language?
That's such a great question. There's so many wonderful Asian films that have been dubbed that are sort of funny to watch now, but they're just so great to see all those Bruce Lee films that are dubbed. I think actually animated film is the best. I as much as I can, I try to see a film in the language that it is performed in and presented in with subtitles. You know, I remember seeing my first subtitle film being like, how am I going to read and watch at the same time? But the more you do it, practice makes perfect. But I do enjoy, and we do a lot in our family series, The Picture Show, we show a lot of like Japanese films that have been dubbed with English actors or American actors. And often they're very famous people, like, you know, Cate Blanchett will do a voice, or Claire Danes, or, you know, these different very well-known actors and actresses to us will do the dubbing of the American version of like a Miyazaki film. And so I actually think those are really great. I think it's, they bring, because they're professional actors, they bring such an interesting tone to the film and they're performing as well as the actors who are in the original language. I will say I was in Spain with my husband for New Year's Eve time. And we, on New Year's Day, we were in Bilbao and everything was closed. And we were like, well, let's go see a movie. And we went to a cinema. And because we speak no Spanish, remember I was a C+ Spanish student, the person behind, you know, we were like, let's go see Star Wars. We'd already seen Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, right around Christmas. But we were like, let's go see, maybe we won't see Star Wars. And Richard Jewell was playing. This was the Clint Eastwood film about the bombing, the Olympic bombing that happened years ago. And when we bought the ticket in broken English and broken Spanish, the person behind the ticket counter really looked at us strangely. We were like, well, it's because we're foreigners, you know, who knows. And then we went into the theater, and the moment the film started, I realized it was the dubbed version of Richard Jewell. So, like, you know, instantly it's like Sam Rockwell's on screen, and he's speaking in Spanish, and I was like, we have a problem. So we went back to the counter, and he was able to explain to us that that week, because it was holiday and, you know, New Year's Eve, and, you know, people were with their families, they were showing everything dubbed versions. So we were like, okay. So we decided to see Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, again, but in Spanish. And I actually enjoyed it second time around, not understanding anything they were saying. It was great. I mean, R2-D2 in Spanish, is excellent. And so my point is that those actors who were, you know, who were, you know, Han Solo and, you know, Babu Frick and R2-D2 and all these characters, they did an amazing job. And after the film was over, there was a whole second set of credits, which was all of those actors and performers who were doing these characters that are so ingrained in American culture, but they were bringing them to light. I mean, whoever was doing Princess Leia, doing Carrie Fisher was like, I mean, I got more emotional watching it in Spanish, which I didn't understand. Although like taser, the word taser is taser, whether you're in English or Spanish. So there were some languages that they didn't need to translate. But anyway, so I think dubbing can be fun just to explore a film and how it's presented dubbed. But animated films are often a really great example of excellent craftsmanship. But it's also really fun to go back to those like 70s and 80s sort of more grindhousey, culty films and watch the really, really bad dubbing. There's a lot of really great Russian films that have been dubbed in English that are just have a glass of wine and have a lot of fun with it because it's really silly.
Here are a couple questions that refer to what you might do with film scene. What about film scene and Bollywood and Nollywood? And then do you plan on having more special events at film scene, such as The Passion of St. Joan and Working Man?
Those are great questions. pardon me. So this year we are anticipating launching two new series. One is called The Essentials and one is called The Auteurs. Pardon me. So the Essentials will be year to year or season to season will be a retrospective series of perhaps like an era. So right now, what I really want to do is the Essentials, the 70s, because the 70s is my favorite era of film internationally and domestically. So it'll be or like a focus on female filmmakers or a particular single director. And then also the auteurs will be a focus on a single director. And we do have one planned. We're going to be doing the retrospective. They've recently restored all of Wong Kar-wai's films. He did In the Mood for Love, which is one of my favorite films of all time. So that'll be happening in June. So from week to week, I think we're going to show about six films. So if you really want to do a deep dive on a really fantastic filmmaker, that'll be an opportunity to do that. And we'll do more series like that. Now that we have more screens, we're able to kind of like stretch our legs and breathe a little bit. We do have another live score event. The one that was mentioned was we did The Passion of Joan of Arc in October with a live score, a composer and some local musicians. We have a live score event that we're going to be doing in September. I am not allowed to announce it yet because it'll be involved in a larger event that we're doing, but that will be of a classic creature feature film with fangs. If that gives you any idea, Dracula. So we'll be doing that in September. We'll be announcing that in like April or May. So those live scoring events are so much fun. We did one last year with the local band, the Awful Purdies. They live scored some silent films directed by women, some of the early silent films directed by women as part of our Real Representation Women's March programming. And then the other question was about the live score, and then there was another... Oh, Working Man, yeah. So Working Man was a film we presented about a month ago with the local filmmaker Robert Jury. He's a wonderful guy. It was his first feature film, and we had two sold-out shows. We had to add an encore because the first one sold out so quickly. So that program is part of our Filmmaker Spotlight, which presents films that are connected to Iowa or locally in some way. And we are out of our current in-focus schedule. Otherwise, I was going to bring them all, but they're flying like they're hotcakes. They go so fast. But we have a number of upcoming spotlight films, including a film this coming Monday called Last Chance Tango by local filmmaker. And it's a short film. It's about 50 minutes that includes a lot of local tango dancers. It's just $5 for that program. So that's Monday at our pedestrian mall location. And then actually we're going to do an encore of Working Man. So at the end of April, we're going to show Bob Drury's film again. And he'll be coming out for a Q&A as well because it was just in such a high demand. So we love as much as we can to show these international kind of spotlight films, but then also to bring it back locally and show that there's so much local talent and so much local filmmaking expertise here in Iowa City and Johnson County and in the state.
I'm going to combine these two, but Americans are notoriously bad at learning foreign languages. In your opinion, does this affect them, their acceptance of foreign films? And then talking a little bit about subtitles. Americans don't like subtitles. So the same question. And then this other question was, Have any solutions been developed or tried for the problem of white subtitles on white backgrounds and the fact that they are very unreadable?
Sure. Well, I'll answer that first part first. I was the opening weekend of Parasite. I was at the box office talking to our box office employee, and these group of college students came up and they were like, "Can we have 2 tickets to Parasite?" And they were like, cool, doing the transaction. And then they were like, "Is it in like Korean?" And I was like, "It is in like Korean, yes." And they were like, "Oh," like the look of like that they'd just been assigned homework was like it was Friday night and they were excited to see a movie and it was this big group of friends and they were just so like, and they so one sort of looked at the other with just total like, "You made me come here and watch subtitles." So I think not to generalize an entire generation, but I do think younger audiences tend to be more reticent to see foreign language films. I think all of us who are mature, movie-going, art-loving people sort of jump at the chance. Again, practice makes perfect. The more you do it, the less you find that you're struggling to read the subtitles. But yeah, it's unfortunate. I think Parasite's win on Sunday hopefully will bring more people to see that movie. I mean, there was an article on Monday morning that the company that distributes the film is expanding it. They're doubling the number of theaters that Parasite is currently in. So if it's in 1,000 theaters in the United States, by Friday it will be in 2,000 theaters. And my little movie theater in Winterset, Iowa, birthplace of John Wayne, we got a request for Parasite, which is like crazy. I mean, we're showing like the Doolittle movie this week. So it's like, this is a huge moment. I mean, so that to me feels like a harbinger of really good things someone walked in and was like, "What's up with that movie that just won all those awards? Are you guys going to get that?" So I love when that kind of stuff happens because I do think, and a film like Parasite is so exciting and like so sort of evocative that I think it bridges a lot of gaps. You know, the Portrait of a Lady on Fire trailer, I heard like oohs and ahs. I mean, I think it's beautiful and it's lush, but you know, it's a period piece French film, you know, about painting and love. So I could see how like a 19-year-old might not like jump at the chance to see that when they can go see, you know, whatever Saw movie is playing at the mall at midnight. So I think it just takes little baby steps like Parasite winning, and also encouraging if you have like young people in your life, grandchildren, nieces, nephews, brothers, sisters, encouraging them to watch a foreign language film, I think is always a really good step. It can be really scary and intimidating to know that you're going to be reading the whole time. So we are a challenging bunch. I think Americans, I'll say this, international, audiences see way more English films than we see foreign language films, way more. I mean, evidenced by the movie theater that I went to in Bilbao was only playing American films. They'd been dubbed in Spanish, but just for that week. So they were seeing Richard Jewell and Little Women and Star Wars. So I think we have a little bit of work to do on that. And then the issue with the white subtitles on white backgrounds, yes, it's very bad. It's very challenging. You'll find that older films are more guilty of that because now people are, especially when like Parasite was being created for international audiences, they did a better job. But like there are a lot of films, I'm thinking of a lot of like, especially films where there's a lot of snow, you know, like there's a Norwegian film and you're like, it's all snow and the subtitles are white. So it is challenging. Those older films probably are, when they get restorations, like the Wong Kar-wai restoration that's happening in June, that's a beautiful digital restoration and they will be updating those subtitles. There's also some like language changes that they'll be incorporating. So the newer films you'll find they're a little bit easier, but even that trailer for Portrait of a Lady on Fire, there were a couple moments like in the sand or the sea where I was like, oh, you can't really read that subtitle. So yeah, it's getting better, but it's a challenge, especially with older films.
All right, this excuse me. This is the last question, a fun one for you. How many films do you see in a year?
Oh no, you will pity me. You will not be jealous. Well, I actually counted it last year as much as I could because I pre-screened for two large festivals. And then I also traveled to the Sundance Film Festival. I was just there a couple weeks ago in Utah. And then I'll travel to the Toronto International Film Festival in Toronto, Canada. So I think I saw about 276 films last year, which is a lot, which is... not a film a day, but it's, yeah. And I definitely fell asleep in some of those, especially at the film festivals. You see like 5 films a day, and I used to really fight it. And now I just sort of like, if I need to sleep, I need to sleep. There was a beautiful film we had at Film Scene a couple weeks ago, which was the new Terrence Malick film called A Hidden Life. I don't know if any of you saw that. It's 3 hours long. It's very beautiful. It's like lush rolling hills and love and despair. But I slept through about 2 hours of it when I saw it at the Toronto Film Festival. I was like, I shouldn't admit that, but it's just, you know, it's a dark room and you've been seeing movies all day and you're kind of sweaty and it's just like, you're like a little baby. So it's hard not to fall asleep. And there are a lot of films that I see that like are for a film festival that I'm viewing for consideration to that festival. So it may be that I see it and then kind of give it a poor review and say it's not a right fit for the festival. So it may just kind of go into oblivion and not be seen. And then I try to see every film that we show at Film Scene, a new release or a special event. There's some that I don't see that, like the new James Bond film, like that's not going to be playing at a festival that I'm at, and they are not going to be sending me a screener list link or a DVD through the mail because, you know, it's a big franchise and a big big brand. So there's some films that I just sort of program sight unseen, and I know that there's enough good in them that will excite audiences. But it's a lot of fun. I really love movies. And I can't help myself but keep watching. I also rewatch Moonstruck like monthly. I watch old episodes of The Office. I just sort of consume. I love Project Runway. I mean, like, you know, media is sort of my medium. So I still get a lot of joy out of it. I imagine someday there will be a time where, you know, so if you work at a pizza place, eventually you hate pizza. But hopefully I will not ever have a moment where I'm like, enough with the film. I think I'll continue to have an appetite for it. So.
So before we close, I want to thank our sponsors again, the University of Iowa's Honors Program, the University of Iowa's Public Policy Center, the University of Iowa's International Programs, and the Stanley UI Foundation Support Organization, and also generous support from today's special sponsors, Mason K. Braverman, Dave and Diane Martin, and Karen and Wally Chapel. So, Rebecca, in appreciation and for you giving us this wonderful talk, we would like to present you with the coveted Iowa City Foreign Relations mug.
Thank you so much. Thank you. That's wonderful. I love them.
So, thank you all for coming, and we are adjourned.